Then, as Fromm says, the ritual expresses a common striving. Practically, this is the most important of all. The ritual is an expression. Elsewhere in his writings, Fromm defines ritual as a symbolic expression of thoughts and feelings by action. So what do we mean by expression? Expression means bringing out something, bringing something out from within, even from the depths. And this is why symbolic expression is necessary. Conceptual expression is not enough. Conceptual expression brings out something only from the conscious mental level. But we've got to do more than that. We've got to bring out from beneath the level of the conscious mind. Now, I've spoken a bit about myth and legend and symbol in one or two previous lectures, and we may say that the ritual is also equivalent to a sort of acted out symbol or acted out or dramatized myth. But the question arises, why is it necessary to bring out from the depths? Why is expression at all necessary? Now, expression means externalization. If you express something which is deep within your own being, you externalize it, you make it into an object, something which you can see, something which is visible, something which you can know. So if we externalize our thoughts and feelings, if we bring up from the depths that which is hidden there and express and externalize, we can then see them and we can then understand them. If we see them and understand them objectively, then we can begin to incorporate them into our conscious attitude, and in this way, our whole being will be enriched, and tension between the conscious and the unconscious will be lessened. Now, all this is a matter for experience, as all those who have participated to any degree in ritual will know. When one performs the ritual actions, one expresses something which is very, very deep within. One therefore objectifies it, one externalizes it, and one is able to incorporate it into one's conscious attitude. We find that this sort of thing happens even with our own very simple devotional meetings when we recite together the sevenfold puja. Everybody knows that when we do this, when we do it properly, when we do it with concentration, we create quite a different sort of atmosphere than when we have a meditation or when we have a lecture. The meditation has its own atmosphere, which is very beautiful. The lecture also has its own atmosphere, which can be very good. But we find that the devotional meeting, when we do a ritual together, when we recite the sevenfold puja and so on, has its own distinctive atmosphere again. And usually what gives it its distinctive atmosphere is the fact that something is brought up from the depths, externalized, objectified, and then incorporated into the conscious attitude so that the conscious attitude is enriched. I think I spoke a few days ago about my experience at the Buddhist Society's summer school shortly after my return to this country in 1964. I remember that I was rather surprised that though there were many lectures and also a little meditation at the summer school, there was no provision for any sort of puja, no provision for any sort of ritual. So one day I suggested that we might try out a little ritual, have a little puja in the evening. So this suggestion at first, I'm afraid, was not very well received. And I was told that English Buddhists were right off ritual. They didn't like it at all, and they reacted rather strongly that they preferred the rational approach. So I said, well, never mind, even if only five or six people want it, let's have it. So it was announced, therefore, that in the Oak Room, at about 9 o'clock at night, there would be, conducted by Bhante, a short puja, a short one. And very simple, not too many candles or anything like that. So, to our surprise, perhaps not to our surprise, instead of having six or seven people, we had practically that whole summer school. I think about 140 people turned up, and it was difficult to get them into the Oak Room. Only six or seven stayed outside. Not only did they come and continue to come every other evening, but they seemed also thoroughly to enjoy it. They seemed definitely to get something out of it. And everybody felt, everybody remarked that a different sort of atmosphere was created. Something seems to be brought up. They knew not how, they knew not why, something seemed to be brought up from the depths which could enrich the conscious attitude and create an altogether more meaningful and harmonious atmosphere. So sometimes we find that people are, as it were, starved for these things. They get just the intellectual approach, just the conceptual approach. It's all books, it's all understanding, it's all talk, it's all ideas, it's all philosophy, it's all theoretical. So when you offer them something which goes a bit deeper, which supplements, which complements the intellectual, not that we're running down the intellectual, this is no less necessary, and it's the approach, the initial approach for practically everybody, but sooner or later we must begin to engage the depths. Sooner or later we must begin to tap those vast resources of energy which lie down there in the unconscious mind. Sooner or later we must begin to speak the language of myth, as I described it, I think, yesterday. Use symbols, use images, and in this way integrate the unconscious with the conscious. And this is what ritual, among other things, helps us to do. Lastly, in the terms of Fromm's definition, ritual is common strivings rooted in common values. Rooted in common values. Ritual is never just ritual. It issues from a whole religious philosophy. We may even say that the more highly developed a religion is, the richer its ritual expression. If we look at all the religions of the world, we can probably claim that the two most highly developed are Buddhism and Christianity. And these two religions, Buddhism and Christianity, are, at least in certain forms, at least in their dominant forms, mainly ritualistic. Christianity's main forms are, we may say, the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church. These are both highly ritualistic. And in Buddhism, we see, for instance, that Tibetan Buddhism is highly ritualistic, as Chan and Zen, and even the Theravada.